first speaker is Kate Hogan. Am I pronouncing that right?
Yes.
And she is going to talk to us about the Nature Mentor Momentum.
Do you know why that little box?
It stays there forever. It's
will
like
it?
A, yeah, okay. Unfortunately, yes.
Okay.
I've noticed it stays there. I haven't figured out how to fix it, so.
Okay, that's all right. No problem.
It was in the previous presentation.
Okay. So it's like a little friend. It's like.
We don't mind.
A little bird on your shoulder. Okay, awesome. Well, my name is Kate Hogan, and I'm the Community Outreach Coordinator for the Audubon Society of Greater Denver. How many of you are from Denver? No one. Okay. All out-of-staters, great. How many of you have heard of the Audubon Society or John James Audubon? Oh, great. Good. Excellent. Well, our local chapter here, we're the Denver chapter. We're slightly different from some of the other metro chapters around the country. We're actually our own 501c3 nonprofit organization. We share a name with National Audubon, but all of our fundraising is on a local level. And so our gentleman that we're named after is John James Audubon. He was born in 1785, passed away in 1851. I found this wonderful quote, and I had to include it in the presentation because oftentimes I feel this way as well. Ah, how often I have been abroad on the mountains, has my heart risen in grateful praise to God that it was not my destiny to waste and pine among those noisome congregations of the city. So I work at a state park here. I did spend the first 10 years of my career working in the metro area, Denver proper, both at the Denver Zoo and also at the Downtown Aquarium, both very urban locations. And so now I'm very fortunate to be able to be working at a state park as of 3 years this September. So this gentleman, he was not only a scientist, but he was also a teacher. He's known most for his bird paintings. So he painted over 400 different paintings during the course of his lifetime. And he was an immigrant to the United States. He wasn't originally from here. So when he got here, when he emigrated from Haiti and France, he actually was so enamored by all of the bird species that he saw here that he made it his life goal to paint each and every one of them. So by the time he passed away, that was over about 400 paintings. And he's one of the few artists that really gained momentum during his lifetime. So our organization is named after him. National Audubon was started in 1901. Our chapter, we were created in 1969, so we're coming up on our 50th anniversary. And our mission is to advocate for the environment, connecting people with nature through education, conservation, and research. So we have three different tiers to our organization. So I'm going to share a little bit about those with you today so that I can help kind of preface why it is that I want to talk about the Nature Mentor Momentum today. So this is what we're about. We're about habitats. We are about birds, but we're also about all local wildlife. A lot of times when you've heard of a National Audubon organization or you've heard of a local Audubon chapter, they focus specifically on birds. I am the first to admit I am not a birder. I'm slowly turning into one. I've learned a lot over the last 3 years, but originally my background was actually in mammals. It was in marine mammals, and working at a zoo and working at an aquarium, I also have a lot of emphasis with fish, other macroinvertebrates, all kinds of different critters. So I have an appreciation for birds, but I also have an appreciation for all forms of wildlife. So this is our nature center. If you have not signed up to go on a field trip tomorrow, I'm one of the hike locations along the South Platte River. So this is our boardwalk. These are our two ponds on either side with the beautiful Colorado foothills behind us. These are all photos of animals that have been taken in and around our nature center location. We have a wonderful, diverse area. So we have a lot of great things to share about. This is our building. There are 1938 restored farmhouses. We also feature native plant gardens. One of our big pushes in conservation is teaching people how to create habitat within their own home, condominium, apartment, assisted living facility, wherever home may be for you, tiny home, ways to be able to incorporate different elements to also create your home to be wildlife friendly. So our big focus is education. That's the biggest part of our tier of what we do. So we lead free birding field trips throughout the metro area. I would also encourage you to look at whatever your local Audubon chapter might be. A lot of them offer free birding field trips, and that's the best way to get started. When I first started and I knew nothing about birds, I went, I started following master birders around, and they would go, oh, did you hear that? That's a da-da-da. Oh, did you see that? That's a da-da-da. And so that's how I learned. That was how I started figuring it out. We also offer a variety of different programs, summer camps, night hikes, our Hootenanny Owl and Music Festival. We also do a year-long naturalist training for adults and a year-long master birder training for adults. Those are programs that are fairly unique to just a handful of chapters throughout the country, and so we offer both. And then we have enough school programs that it merits having a whole other full-time staff person. So that's another arm of what we do, where we actually go into schools, teach students, and then we also bring students out to our nature center. We also are very active in local conservation. We're talking just here in the metro area. National Audubon is huge because they have the resources and the time and the staff to be able to tackle some of those larger conservation issues. We very much focus just on the metro area. So some of the things I'd like to share with you, if you happen to come back to Colorado or if you're going on field trips tomorrow, we do a great job with being able to kind of help, again, like I said, feature just creating backyard bird habitat here in Colorado. That plant life is going to be different, obviously, from wherever you are, but I would encourage you to research what your local plant life is. Here in Colorado, we've got a lot of things that have been introduced in the last 100 years. And so being able to kind of refocus on what some of those native wildflowers are, of which the selection is gorgeous, it's just a matter of teaching people that you can easily plant those. A lot of times they take less water, and it's just going to be better for your water bill and your home and the wildlife around you in general. So that's a big push. We also, this is our state park where we're located, Chatfield State Park. And we currently, our conservation committee is actually in a federal lawsuit with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers because they have said that they would like to expand the size of the park and how much water it holds. And without going into a whole nother presentation on that, what we've said is that we just think that it's not a good idea as far as water resources go. As we all know, in the western United States, water is a huge deal. And water laws in Colorado are very complicated. And so the project that they had proposed is going to wipe out over 500 acres of wildlife habitat within the state park. And also the Army Corps document that they submitted over 10 years ago when they were first planning the project actually mentions a tiny sentence where it says there's a 0% dependable yield. And so what that means is that they cannot guarantee anyone additional water. And all of the water providers that are involved in this project are junior water rights holders. And so what that means is that if they're junior water rights, the people that have the senior water rights above them are going to have first dibs at that water anyway. So those could be agricultural rights, could be other businesses down the line, places like Denver Water that have been around for over 100 years as well. So it was enough that our conservation committee decided to file a lawsuit in federal court against the project. The governor of Colorado signed off on the project as well, and so that's why they decided to take it to the federal level. So we are still waiting to hear if that is going to go through or not. We also were pivotal in the foundation of the Rocky Mountain Arsenal. So that's another area that is north of I-70. It's now a wildlife refuge. A number of our chapter members volunteered with helping the cleanup of that site. And then they transformed it into this wildlife refuge right in the heart of Denver. And so that was over 30 years ago that they were involved in that. We also house the Colorado Bluebird Project. If you guys, anybody love bluebirds? I love bluebirds. A lot of people do. So we actually have a number of bluebird monitoring sites throughout the state of Colorado. And so those are just some different examples of projects that we house under our organization to assist with local wildlife. And then we also support non-game wildlife research. So Lois Webster was one of our founding members in 1969. And she, in 1995, had a group of her family that decided to form a fund that would specifically help to support non-game wildlife research in the state of Colorado. So we work very closely with Colorado Parks and Wildlife, but the money that they have for non-game and endangered species is very limited. And so this is a way for us to be able to provide supplemental funds to students at universities, also other nonprofit organizations. So we have helped fund things like bat research in Colorado and the Colorado Butterfly Monitoring Project, which is something that we do here. There's different trails for monitoring butterflies here within the state, and that's housed under another nonprofit organization. So there's just been a number of different things that we have supported over the last few years with over $81,000 donated. So that's a separate fund from our overall fund. And then we're also supported by 350 local chapter members. Again, those are local people that believe in what we do. Our private donors are also pivotal. So these ladies over here, that's Erling Kingery, this lady here, and then also Carolyn Work. Erling Kingery is the husband of one of our other founders, Hugh Kingery. Hugh Kingery and Erling still, almost 50 years later, teach our beginning bird watching class twice a year. And so we just wouldn't be anywhere without our private donors. There's also a unique national model here as well called the Scientific and Cultural Facilities District. That is a tax that is located in the seven metro counties of Denver, where money actually goes to all of the science and cultural institutions that you see in the Denver metro area. No one else in the country has this. And so this is their logo over here. And what they do is they take a small amount, about 1 cent of every $10 spent in the seven metro counties, and they siphon it off into a fund. And so we're recipients of that. That's the only form of grant funding that we receive. Mm-hmm. Getting any sort of grant funding is also very difficult. We have tried, and what we found is that we're a nature organization, right. So we don't need to have money, because why would you pay for nature? And then we have a handful of corporate sponsors or foundations that have worked with us. So this is just a few of their logos here, but it's not, we don't get thousands and thousands of dollars. It's usually, you know, a couple thousand here or there for a specific project. What's been huge for me is getting all of their employees out to pull weeds nice. At the Nature Center, because managing a piece of land is very, very difficult. So, and then also we have a little bit of program fees that come in, and then also we have some big fundraisers. I will throw this out there to you guys, since you're all not from Colorado. We have an international photography contest that's online called Share the View. And so that has been huge for us. It raises anywhere from $17,000 to $20,000 for our nonprofit organization. And we receive submissions from all over the world. And anybody who wants to submit, if you are interested in nature photography, that's a good way to do it. And all of the funds go to us, and then there's some prize money as well. So we have a lot of different things that we use to help support us. And we would not be able to do it without our 160 volunteers. We also have teen volunteers. Our teen volunteer program just started recently within the last 3 years. And so it's just a wonderful way. As you guys all know, if you're involved in any nonprofit or any church, there's just no way that we could do it without volunteers. I am one of three full-time staff members, and we have two part-time people. And we have a big job ahead of us. So I wanted to switch gears, and the reason why I chose this topic is this is something that's been on my heart a lot lately. As someone who has been doing this my entire career, teaching children about the outdoors, being with them outdoors in whatever capacity that might look like, I've found that getting the kids outside, that is a piece of cake. Once I get them, they are excited, they are happy. I think I've had one little girl one time who said to me, well, I just don't really like the outdoors. I think I'm allergic. Okay, but for the most part, when I get my kids, our school kids out there, my own children, once they get to me, we have a great time, no matter what. It's a great day. What I have found to be more challenging is convincing the adults and their lives that it is worthwhile to make time for that activity. So I wanted to kind of challenge this group to think about maybe a mentor that you've had in your life, maybe outside the capacity of obviously nature. It could be any mentor of any kind. So I'm just gonna give you a minute. You can think about someone where you think, oh, that was just someone that was really pivotal in helping to guide me and where I am today. So when looking at that framework, this is my definition. This is no one's official definition other than my own. So when you're looking at a nature mentor is going to be an individual who inspires others to discover the natural world around them through observation and interaction. So when we're thinking about mentorship, I am thinking you can be a mentor to anybody. It doesn't have to be a child. You can be a mentor to another adult. You can be a mentor to a teen. You can be a mentor to a child. You can be a mentor to a baby. There are so many different ways and capacities that you can be a nature mentor. But the key thing with this is inspiring them to make discoveries. And so different from other kind of traditional mentorships, I wanted to also share with you some of the things I've experienced that a mentor does not make. So a mentor, a nature mentor, is not a know-it-all. They're also not always a scientist by training, which I find, ooh, being in a room of all of us scientists, maybe that's a little crazy for me to say, but they're not always a scientist. And then also they're not a lecturer spewing words at great length. This sort of situation for me where I have to do a lecture, not usually something that I'm doing. So these are some things that a nature mentor is not. I have seen some of our most amazing volunteers that are not scientists by trade, but it's how they react and how they share the information that makes them the best nature mentor. So I'm going to share with you some adjectives that I came up with of what a nature mentor is. So a nature mentor is going to be a revealer. They're going to be a questioner. They're going to be a storyteller. They're going to be patient. They're going to be comical. They're going to be a learner. They're going to be excited. Sorry, there we go. I'll leave that there. So we'll look at these real quick, okay? So one of the things that I love when I'm outside is you just have to look at everything around you, the whole picture. And so being able to just answer every question and be able to just know all of the things out there, the first thing I tell people is that I don't know it all. I don't. I am learning new things all the time. I see bugs all the time. I have no idea what they are. I see scat that shouldn't look like that. There's all kinds of things that happen to me out there that I don't always know. And the biggest thing that I tell people is I say, you know what? I don't know. That's okay. It's okay for me to not know. Because if you are going to be a naturalist, I can't specialize in bugs. I can't specialize in plants. I mean, I could. But I have to know all of it. I get questions about everything. Miss Kate, why is the sky blue? Okay. You know, there's things like that that always come up. There's always amazing questions. And so I feel like a lot of times our volunteers will say this to me too. I'm afraid I'm not going to know the answer. That's okay. It's not about knowing the answer. So a lot of times what I do is I will also throw questions back at the kids. I have no idea what kind of a bug that is. What do you think? Let's look. What colors does it have? How many legs does it have? Where is it at? Is it in the water? Is it on land? There are so many ways that when you're out in nature, you can ask people to help figure out what things are. You don't have to know it all. And so I find that when I share that with people, it really kind of helps to bring their guard down to go, oh, I could do this. I could do this. Absolutely. When it comes to being comical, sometimes I will impersonate an animal that might have just taken a little moment to do its business. I will not recreate that for you right now because I don't have a pile here that I can share with you. And then also, this is the biggest thing. When kids are outside, if you're just like, that's a rock, that's a crow. Oh yeah, no, that's just a caterpillar. Come on, we're over here. We're talking about eagles, let's go. That is such a disservice. Because if you get excited about a rock, the kids are going to be excited about a rock. Or the adults are going to be excited about the rock. And so what I have found is that, again, whatever idea I have in my mind about what that lesson's going to be that day, a lot of times nature is revealing to me what it is we're going to talk about. Nature is sharing with me, we just saw a bull snake swim across the water. Let's talk about that. Somebody might be scared to death of snakes. Let's address that. So there's a lot of times things where if I'm just excited, it's not just a robin. It's a robin. And did you know that robins can eat 14 feet worth of earthworms in one day? One day. 14 feet. Absolutely. And so it's being able to know some of those little things about the animals that maybe they didn't realize. A nature mentor is also going to be prepared. So having some sort of an idea in your head of something you can talk about if you're out there and you're not really seeing anything cool, sometimes it's really hot, you know, maybe there's not any animals out, but there's a lot of other things you can address. Another huge thing that I love to draw on, which is why I am not a classroom teacher, is because of the freedom aspect. So when parents ask me, well, what did you guys do at camp today? Well, we went to the river and they played for an hour and they built beaver lodges. And I did nothing. I sat there, I gave them an assignment. I said, we're gonna talk about beavers. Beavers work together in families. And they have to build lodges to protect their young. You two, you guys are all beaver pairs. Go build your lodge. I'm gonna check in with you in half an hour. And I don't have to do anything. They just go with it, and that's so important. There's a great organization called the Children and Nature Network that was started by a lot of these guys that are some of these authors that I cite, Richard Louv, and then also Scott D. Sampson. You know, these guys, they are really calling to people to help kids get outside and play and interact. But not just kids. I mean, adults too. When was the last time you went and played in the river? I was there on Friday. So fun. So really, there's so much that can just be used by getting out and interacting with nature in an unstructured way. Okay? So the woods were my Ritalin. Nature calmed me, focused me, and yet excited my senses. So a lot of momentum came after Richard Louv wrote his last Child in the Woods. And I will tell you right now that working with kids outside, I see this all the time. It's such a huge thing. And people nod their heads and they say, yes, yes, absolutely. And so there's research now being put into this, thank goodness, because for a long time, it was a social phenomenon that we were all seeing. But now through the Children in Nature Network, they're actually having studies. Scientific studies that are being done that help give us some data as to how true these sorts of statements can be. And then I want to encourage each of you, since you're not from Denver, or some of you might be from Denver that walked in at the end, so rediscover the nature in your own backyard. I'm very fortunate in that I have a little girl and a little boy that are under the age of 5. And so one of the biggest things that we do is we go outside into our backyard or the open space that's next to us. You don't have to pack up your kids and take them to the mountains. I've done that too. But what they have found time and time again is if kids are able to interact with nature in their own backyards, that is really pivotal for them. And so I'm going to share with you, I grew up in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And I just wrote into my elementary school there about how when I kind of look at where my career has come full circle, I still remember hiking up rivers when I was 9 years old. I don't remember what they taught me. I don't remember what I learned, but I do remember that experience. And so I wrote back to my elementary school, whose founder is now in assisted living, and I shared with them what I'm doing today and how much I love it. And so they wrote me back and they said, oh, this is so great. This is so great. We're so excited to hear that. And so I really do credit them and credit those experiences to me dedicating my life to trying to share with others about God's creation and the natural world and the wildlife found within it. So today we humans, especially those of us in the urban developed world, exist largely without a meaningful connection to place. We are displaced. And so one of the biggest things that we can do for anyone, not just kids, but kids, teens, adults, is to reconnect them with the nature that is right in their own backyard. And assisted living facilities is another location where I would love to see us go more with this. Because if you are pretty restricted with mobility and where you can go, going just outside to sit in a garden can be huge. Just sitting in the sunshine for 15 minutes. You don't have to take a big trip. It can be right next door to you. And we also need nature mentors now more than ever. Okay, so there's this whole idea about getting a dose of vitamin N. So that is a term that has been coined as well that talks about, you know, we should be getting a dose of nature daily, just like we take our vitamins in the morning, okay, or our aspirin to help with our aches and pains. So vitamin N is huge, and the place we can start is by doing that with ourselves and then also encouraging someone to go with us. And then taking a forest bath. So there's a movement in Japan where people will just go, they just walk in the forest It's like taking a bath in the forest. You walk with no intention, just you're out there, just taking it all in. And so I love that image, and I really wanted to put a bathtub in here and some trees growing out of it. And last but not least, the Creator does not abandon us. He never forsakes his loving plan or repents of having created us. Humanity still has the ability to work together in building our common home. So my faith background is Roman Catholic. I have been waiting years for a pope to say something like this. Now, there were a couple of other popes prior who did comment, and they did have things that were issued, but this was amazing to me. And one of the things that I did was I led talks in some of my local churches here, and it was interesting to me still how many people reacted the way that they did. There were still some really hard conversations to be had, but this was kind of the way that I saw myself as being able to take on that role, and then also contacting local youth groups and encouraging them, if you don't have environmental education and outdoor experiences integrated into your youth curriculum, you should. It should be there. And so I have been doing a lot of work locally to try and contact those people and get them out to our location. And last but not least, I wanted to ask you guys, who's the mentee in your life? So this is my daughter. She was 2.5 when this picture was taken. So this is at a live bird banding station. And she still remembers Miss Meredith, who is the ornithologist. And she remembers touching the birds. And so when we found a fledgling in our neighborhood last year, she said, Mommy, can I touch it? I remember I'll just use one finger. So even this young, you know, those experiences and those memories, they stick with them. And then just one other interesting thing as well from her. There was one night where there was a robin singing earlier this spring. And as a way to kind of give her something to think about before she went to bed, after I left the room, I told her, I said, why don't you listen to the robin singing and then kind of come up with some ideas about what you think he might be singing about. And without missing a beat, she said to me, Mommy, I think he's singing about God, because God is everywhere, up in the sky, in the clouds, and in the hail, a remembrance of one of the storms we had had previously. So I said to her, I think you're right. And I wished her love and sweet dreams. So let us remember to look at our earth, God's creation, with childlike eyes, a sense of awe and wonder, curiosity, and compassion. That's it. I'll take it.
Do you have some time for questions? For
Kate? You guys have any questions? I did that good of a job, huh? No questions.
I just want to say, sure. That's awesome. Thank you.
Yeah,
I
sure.
I worked for Mass Audubon for about 25 years. Okay. I had ran a preschool program for children, so we're outside every day, rain and hail and sun.
Yes.
And
yeah. Awesome. And Mass Audubon is awesome, too. We know that. Yeah. Any other questions? Yes.
I guess I'm going to put the same kind of comment. This goes to your talk, but just the idea that one of the major influences parents can have on their kids.
Yes. Yeah, and yes, and grandparents as well, great grandparents. But the other thing that I think too that I would love to see people embrace is also that idea of, you know, there's a lot of talk about it being adults to kids, but adult to adult too, because there are just a lot of adults who, in my experience, just over time working with people, especially when they want to argue with you on climate change and whether or not that's happening, you know, sometimes I will say, come with me, let me show you and explain to you. These leopard frogs used to be here. They're not now. You know, there's things that I see in the field, things that are happening, you know, birds that get caught in all sorts of things from, you know, that are crippled from pesticide use in, you know, neighborhoods. You know, those are the types of things that I see that people submit to us, but I think there's just a lot of people that just aren't aware, and so being able to take them and show them, like, your action that you do here directly impacts this, even on an adult-to-adult level, is huge. Yeah. Did you have
I was just curious. When you talk to parents who might be wary about children being in the outdoors and not being able to control the situation, danger, or whatever, what kinds of things do you, do you share with them to encourage them to do so?
Yeah, so that's a great question. One of the things that I kind of encourage them to do is to just educate themselves. about what the harms might be, and then obviously you've got to weigh that. So for example, at our nature center, we have rattlesnake all over the place. Now, I've only ever encountered rattlesnake a couple of times, and one time it was with our summer camp kids, but I educated all of the teens that were with me, before you just walk up to a snake, maintain your distance, look and figure out what it is, check it out first, and then slowly back away. I also share that usually the people that are bitten by rattlesnakes are young adults that are male between the ages of 21 and 24 that have been drinking. So it's, you know, there's a lot of you know, kind of myths about anything, right? I mean, they get worried, oh, if we go out, you know. A little bit, though, too, that danger, in a way, can also be very healthy. You know, I mean, letting the kids kind of experiment and test their boundaries a little bit, and even you as an adult, testing your boundaries as well. I am really hyper aware when I'm out hiking with a group about rattlesnakes, but that doesn't mean I'm going to let it ruin the time that we have together. So, you know, I just encourage parents, educate yourself on really what are the real dangers. You know, I mean, a mountain lion. Okay, yes, we have mountain lion in Colorado. We have bear in Colorado. But most of the time, if you are smart and aware of your surroundings and what is going on and what's around you and don't hike alone, things like that, there's a lot of common sense things. And so the stories that you hear about, you know, I mean, somebody's dog could attack you. I also love to share with people, I've been bitten 3 times by animals in all of my years of working with animals. Twice it was a rabbit. Serious. I was holding a rabbit and it nailed me during a program. And then also like a kookaburra, because I was holding it on my hand and she got mad about something and she bit me and she twisted my skin and I had a big welt. But otherwise, I mean, I've never been bitten or attacked by anything outside. But I'm also aware where I'm going. Yes?
I mean, to have that experience, I mean, I was hiking on the Appalachian Trail. I've never heard of a rattlesnake until the event occurred.
Yeah.
And that's a big change. It's something you don't know what you're looking for, but you've never experienced it.
Right.
And to have that experience in a safe situation.
Right.
Is really, really useful.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Can we all thanks, Kate, again. Passion for environment really does